Hi, my name is John.
And my name's Chris.
And this is Stay on Target. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stay on Target. We are your hosts. You can follow us on Twitter at JohnWright777.
And ChrisWright250.
This is episode number 63, and we are actually going to be taking some like listener questions this week.
Yeah, last week we asked you for some questions.
And you have... I almost said answered.
You have responded.
Yes, responded to our request.
And we're going to. Well, not really questions. They're basically just topics.
Yeah.
To talk about, which is what I want. I don't necessarily want probing questions.
Yes, like, you know, what did you have for breakfast this
what
week?
What color is the lint in your belly button? Things
That's
like that.
That's an awkward question.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be the color of your t-shirt, whatever that is?
Maybe. It depends on how long it's been in there.
Oh, that's really disgusting. This is going to
the
really...
period of time since you last cleaned out your belly button.
No, just no.
So yeah, we'll be talking about that later. But first,
the pick of the week.
Pick of the week. John, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week this week is actually Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, that's been out for a while.
It's been out for a while, and I saw it back whenever it first like was in theaters.
Yeah,
and then whenever, you know, I've just rewatched it recently, and it is a amazing film.
It is.
I love that film. It's a it's one of my favorite, like, just writing. It just kind of converges all of my, you know, favorite things into a movie. So
Best Picture winner.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, and Jennifer Lawrence won Best Actress for it as well.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Just a great film. That's basically all I have to say about it. What is your pick of this week, Chris?
My pick of the week, I'm reading Savages by Don Winslow.
Nice.
And I'm almost done with it. I'm going to watch the movie after I finish.
Now, that has also been out for a while.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I was perusing around McKay's bookstore, used bookstore.
Yeah.
It's a huge, giant, like the biggest used bookstore I've ever seen here in Nashville. And it's like a Walmart for used books. That puts a bad light on it.
It does kind of put a bad light on it.
There are thousands of books. So I'll just put it this way. It's just rows upon rows upon rows. Anyway, and I saw it there and I'm like, hey, I never saw that movie. Maybe I'll read the book and see how the movie is. And so I picked it up. The book's really good. I can see why they wanted to make it into a movie. Like the way it's written, it's very... it's written in a third person, it's almost, I wouldn't say it's written like a screenplay, but like it's very conversational. Like there's not a lot of, you know, like descriptive paragraphs or anything like that. Like it's all about the conversation and like, okay, this person does this, and it's very straightforward.
Well, less like in the thoughts of of the characters, and more like in the action, that sort of thing. Because a lot of times, like, that makes for a really good film.
Yeah, sometimes, like, you know, there's a lot of like talking through what the characters are thinking and like their experiences that have brought them to this point.
Yeah.
And so like it's just kind of written like it feels, you know, where I imagine it in my mind, it feels very like fast and very quick, and it feels like it could be a screenplay. Like the same feeling I get whenever I read this, same feeling I get whenever I read really good screenplays.
That's awesome.
So, you know, I can see why they made it into a movie. I don't think it did very well. And so like,
we'll see.
I'll see. Yeah.
You should update us whenever you end up watching the movie and see how well it was adapted to film.
I like doing this, you know, and some, you know, most of the time, I will say a lot of times movies don't make me want to go read the book.
Right.
But, and I don't think that's a fault of the book. I think it's a lot of times that's a fault of the movie. Good movies will, like, you know, Lone Survivor. That made me want to go read the book, and I picked up the book after that.
Right on.
Other movies that I've read the book will make me want to go see the movie, and then the movie will not necessarily be that great. Like, that could be the case with Savages. It was the case with, like, The Ruins. Whenever that came out, you know, it was a horror movie. The book was really good, but the movie was, it's all right. But then, you know, and then some things, you know, like Lord of the Rings or whatever, like, it's just, man, that's such a good book to read before the movie.
So. Right. And it, in fact, makes you want to go back and either reread through the books or that sort of thing. And the same, like, could be said with, like, Catching Fire, like, such a great adaptation to film that it made me want to go back and, like, experience the book again.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Whereas the first movie didn't.
Oh, so of course not.
It's very interesting the way that, you know, a good movie will make you want to go back to the source material, and because you know that you can dive deeper in the book than the movie provides, you know.
Right, like, yeah, because it, like I said, it deals with, like, you know, the thoughts and the emotions, and it deals with the characters on a more internal, personal level, as opposed to just kind of that external force. So, yeah, for sure, dude. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm into this week, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it pans out. All right, so this week we're diving into some listener topics.
Listener topics, yes. And I guess they're most of them are formed in question form, but yeah. I mean, we kind of place that out there, okay, as topics.
Yeah, like it's topics, really. Like, it's just correct.
Yes. All right, so jumping right in.
Yeah, who's this come from?
This comes from Fultron, our friend.
Yeah, what's his Twitter handle?
It is. Let me see. Hang on a second. Let me get over to it. This is at Josh Fulton. So JOSHFULTON. And nice. Make sure you follow him. He's got some awesome videos and that sort of thing that go up.
Yes, he's been on the podcast before.
Yes,
but he submitted a
topic.
Question,
and it was a really good topic. Yes. I thought it was pretty awesome. He says, "Why do you think Minecraft is so addictive? But yet, whenever you try to describe it to another person, you sound like you live with 50 cats and have never seen a female before." And I will posit this, that it's just, you know, that problem probably isn't a purely male problem, you know, that it's you seem like you just don't ever see anyone, like, whenever that happens.
What's hilarious is it's almost like those two things are completely separate. Like, they're not, it's not like... Hey, I like Minecraft. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think
it comes down to, like, this may be a question more relating to the wider video game and gaming culture than it is necessarily to Minecraft specifically. Because Minecraft specifically, like, that's a really, like, everyone knows about Minecraft.
Well, like, I think the more common question is, you know, like, hey, I play Minecraft, and someone will go, yeah, my kid plays that, you know?
Right.
And it's more something like that they relate to something that their child likes to play more than, you know, adults.
Yeah. And I mean, there's some like educational programs that actually use Minecraft as a teaching tool, that sort of thing as well. And to me, it's just, like I said, it's a question for like gaming culture. And honestly, like, more people game than you think. And I think this might be a... I don't know, maybe you would say, you've said this to me before, where like some situations are only awkward if you make them awkward, and are only like, they only really like make you feel a certain way. They don't necessarily reflect, like, it's not like that person is then automatically judging you for playing Minecraft. You're kind of projecting that onto them.
Yeah, for sure.
Or you feel kind of insecure about it, maybe. And then so like it makes it a little bit awkward for you.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, like a lot of, I agree with that fully. Like, you know, if you're a gamer and you know, a lot of times people will say, are you a gamer or something like that? And I don't think they're ever like going to then stick up their nose and say, well, you know, why don't you join the rest of society? And I think they're genuinely curious about, like, what is, like, this interests you and, you know, why? Like, you obviously, you know, like, spend your time on this. And, you know, this is something that's as valid as, you know, someone who likes to go play golf every weekend, you know, and or somebody who, like, loves football. Like,
yeah,
you love to game. Like, that's a hobby. Like, they're all hobbies and they're all legitimate and they all serve different purposes. They're both, you know, like, entertainment, you know, like, I have friends who love to delve into sports stats. Like,
yeah,
they watch the games, but not for the sake of just the game, but because of they want to memorize all these stats from, like, you know, the players. And it's like, that's legitimate in its own right, just as anything else, you know, another hobby is legitimate. And so, you know, just treat it that way in your own mind.
Right.
And
the rest of the world will accept it. You know, it's like, and you will run into those people where it's like, you play Minecraft? Ha ha ha.
Right, but then, like, you also run into people who are like, you memorize sports stats?
Exactly.
You know?
And so I think that in some, like, you know, very niche things, maybe there is a little bit of polarization. But I think that, like you said, it's like the majority of that is like people are just genuinely like, hey, what interests you about this? Because,
yeah,
you know, that's a world that I may not know anything about. And I want you to help communicate what your, you know, passion about this is. So that's what I would say.
There were some stats that came out earlier this year, and they've come out consistently over the past few years. But, you know, like, they're basically demographics for, like, who is a gamer. And
right,
basically, like, it's cross gender now. Like only like 51% of gamers are male, 49% are female.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, you've got, you know, across the spectrum of ages that are now playing, because like you have everyone who has even mobile phones that will spend hours upon hours playing like a mobile phone game. We've talked about that before. Our mobile games, like, are those gamers? And, you know, like we've kind of, you know, wavered back and forth, you know, but the thing is, if you love to play this game, you're a gamer, you know, like,
yeah.
And so like just, you know, saying, well, you're not a hardcore gamer or whatever, like we can make delineations like that. That's fine. But you know, like a gamer is a gamer. If you like to play games, you like to play games.
Right.
You know, and
well, and you don't have to be into like, you know, Mass Effect or whatever in order to be considered a gamer or in order to be considered, you know, in that, in that, subculture and that, in that sort of thing. I mean,
you think about the Wii, it sold how many units? 200 million units.
Oh my gosh.
And I think it was like one in every two households have a Wii.
Yeah.
Or had a Wii at one point.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, everyone was picking up those, your mom, your grandmother, like they
right.
they're all picking them up.
Well, and also like you said, there's some statistics about the like the demographics of gamers and things like that, and it's more than you think. Like whenever you define like what a gamer is or whatever, I mean, there's, you know, you can define, hey, X number of hours per day or per week or whatever, and you can kind of just like put that out there, but it's a lot of people. Whether it's, you know, like you said, whether it's like a online game or whether it's a mobile phone game, which again, almost everyone that exists has a gaming device because they have phones.
You're basically carrying around a game console 24/7.
Right, a really good game console sometimes, you know, depending on the device and the game. And you know, it's just, it's the gaming world that we live in today is way more accepting, I think, of games and, you know, Minecraft and or Call of Duty. You know, it just it doesn't really matter what you play, because everybody kind of is interested in it.
Yeah.
So.
Some numbers from Minecraft. Actually, last week, it crossed the 16 million copy milestone on PC and Mac. And then it's already, I think, the week before, 2 weeks before, it said that the total Minecraft sales were approaching 54 million.
That's a lot of sales, dude.
I know. Like 54 million copies of this game worldwide.
That's so many sales. And it didn't they say that the console sales had surpassed the PC and Mac sales?
Oh yeah, the console sales have, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's interesting as well. You know, like it started now, like admittedly the more robust version is on PC and Mac. That's where they update the most frequently. That's where the larger version that just goes on forever exists.
You know, right.
Like, there are a lot of extra features, but then a lot of people just like the casual nature that the consoles bring. You know, like the recipes are already there. You don't have to memorize things. You know, you...
Or let's be honest, you don't have to have the Minecraft wiki pulled up behind you.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
That sort
of
thing.
I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I forget how to build a table or something. You know, like I'm not...
I always forget how to build like the stuff that just like doesn't make any sense, that sort of thing. Like, you know,
like
just
what
is it? The
shears. I don't know how to.
Yes.
I don't know how to do.
I don't remember
how to do
that,
shears
for sure.
I don't know. There's like I always have to look these things up, you know. And some people are laughing right now and saying you don't really love Minecraft if you don't know how to make shears. But I just don't, you know. And a lot of people don't want to remember that stuff.
Well, and it's also like it's that argument where it's like you can answer almost any question you have in your phone now, and so like why memorize anything? It's like, okay, you know,
that's a separate issue entirely. We should have another topic about that.
Completely different topic.
Yeah, I feel my brain turning to mush all the time.
I know, dude. Me too, man.
Because I'm always like everything's going in one ear and out the other. Because why? I don't have to remember it because I can look it up later.
It's on your phone. Ask Siri. Just, you know, it's like so many times it's like, oh, I don't know what the release date of X is because I don't need that information because it's on my phone, you know, or it's in my calendar or whatever.
Or how many milliliters? Well, that's okay. How many quarts are in a gallon? I know that one, actually.
There's actually
like pints in a gallon.
Well, like I have like that posted on my fridge. Like it's just on a magnet on my fridge. And it's just like, well, I don't need to know that because I can just look at the fridge.
Right. I was looking for some jars last week. This is an entirely different topic.
This is really weird.
For some jars last week, and everything I needed to convert ounces to milliliters, and it was just like it was.
Just
I had
your
to do
brain.
It. In, yeah, I know. I had to do it in my phone all the time. It was just it's impossible.
Yeah,
the metric system, man.
Dude,
what's
the
up
only,
with that?
It's like the metric system is everywhere in the world except for here,
it's
too.
Honestly, because it does make more sense.
It does make a lot more sense.
But we're just kind of like, well, we'll just use the
we're going to make things really hard.
Yeah.
We can make things really more difficult for ourselves and not use the metric system.
Yep. Anyway. Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, I guess, you know, like people will only think that you live, you know, with 50 cats and have never seen a woman before if you behave as if you have 50 cats and you've never seen a woman before.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, like, I mean, about the shedding problem with 50 cats. I'm just thinking, like,
you would think that you would breathe in hair.
Wouldn't you notice if somebody like lives with 50 cats? Unless they're investing tons of money into lint rollers.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, it would just be really weird.
Maybe you have before you leave your house, you just like roll your entire body up against a sticky wall.
A life-size lint roller.
Yeah, that'd be
amazing.
You just kind of squeeze yourself between.
It's on your door. Yeah, you just kind of like exit, you know? It's like those, what are they, the fun houses or whatever, you know?
Yeah, those things you have to squeeze between the fun house if they're just sticky.
Or the tubes that always spun. Just lay down on the tube and let it spin you, you know?
Yes, dude. I want to go in through one of those right now. Those were awesome.
Those were pretty awesome.
The rolling tunnels
that would
turn.
I feel like those are super dangerous,
at the end of haunted houses.
Yes, but I feel like those are super dangerous.
They are. I was always disappointed, though, if you would get to the end and it's not
off.
Turning.
I know, man. If there's no threat to your life, it's not fun anymore.
I mean, that's definitely true. The X Games proves that.
Oh, gosh. Oh, geez.
We should move on to our next question.
All right, the next question is coming from JJ. And that's all the name we have is just...
There's no Twitter handle or anything.
No Twitter handle, just a J and a J. Okay.
All right.
And he says, let me ax you this. Who's going to woman the box office war, Captain America or Superman versus Batman, and why?
Cool. I think he's saying who's going to win
the
box office
war. Definitely. And he's asking, not axing.
Yes.
So, yes. So who is going to win the box office war? Captain America.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the Winter Soldier. Maybe the Captain America 1. I'm not exactly sure.
I don't think so.
Or Superman versus Batman.
I think it's curious that he chose these two as they are debuting in two separate summers.
Yes, completely different years.
So I don't know that they're actually warring against each other.
They're not really going to go up against each other. But this does bring up an interesting question.
Oh, yeah?
The franchises, like we've turned DC Universe into a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that stacks up against the Marvel Universe that already exists?
I don't believe that we've got a Justice League movie probably coming. I don't know that it will reach the box office total that the Avengers did.
Right.
Seeing as the Avengers had, you know, several lead-in movies, you know, and they built this world over time.
Right.
And, you know, built up, you know, some cachet with the audience. As far as these two movies that he mentioned, I don't know. Like, I'm tempted to say that Batman versus Superman will make more money because of the inclusion of Batman. You know, we just came off of, you know, not recently, but I guess in 2012 was the last Dark Knight, the last Batman movie, and Christopher Nolan is attached as an executive producer to these movies, and so you know, you have some brand recognition there, like a good taste in people's mouths from the last Batman franchise, and I think the Batman name alone could possibly propel this over the Captain America box office total. I was talking to a friend earlier this week, and he proposed that the only reason that the next movie after Man of Steel wasn't Man of Steel 2, and it's now Superman versus Batman, and they kept the name Superman versus Batman, is that Batman plays better with the audiences, you know, and they wanted something that could lead into a Justice League movie, and something that's titled Man of Steel 2 doesn't necessarily indicate that. I think the idea is now that they'll go from Man of Steel to Batman versus Superman to a Justice League movie, then do a Man of Steel 2.
Hmm.
And then possibly a Wonder Woman movie,
which would be awesome.
Yeah, which would be great. So we'll see. In relation to that question, you know, you think that's correct? You know, you think
I don't know. I think that it directly related to those two movies. I think you look at how the Marvel movies have like been doing, and I mean, I guess it's already set in stone what Captain America has done, but I don't know if we're going to reach that status with this next Batman versus Superman. The only wild card, like you said, is the Batman name. Like, how big of a draw is that going to be? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, this has arguably the two biggest superheroes in it. I mean, it's like, you know, I guess the other bigger ones are like Spider-Man and Wolverine, and those aren't in the Marvel movies. Right. They don't, you know, they don't team up, that sort of thing. I mean,
right.
But Batman and Superman, being the rights the way they are, they can definitely team up, and they are teaming up. So it's like that could draw so many people, but I don't know. It just depends on it. Cause it was a big smash hit with Winter Soldier. So.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't really seen any trailers yet either. And so
right.
we don't know what the marketing push is going to be. We don't know like what this film actually looks like,
right.
if it even seems like it's going to be good. And so I think if they do it right, it could make more money.
There's a decent amount of buzz though in the industry still, and we're still like so far out from this thing. So
yeah,
and we haven't seen a trailer. So it's like
they released a photo like last week or something like that.
Right. And as long as they keep up this this barrage of awesome stuff that they're, you know, they're pushing forward with
yeah.
it. And they don't make any big missteps.
Yeah.
Then I think we'll be solid. I think it will definitely beat it. But
something that I don't know that we have talked about this before. Whenever you look at the number of superhero movies coming out in the future versus how the ones that have come out in the past,
yeah.
there's an increasing number of superhero movies.
Yes.
And you know, like whenever you look at the box office totals, I think Avengers holds the record, you know, as the highest grossing superhero movie since we started basically back in, what was that, 2000 and was that 2001 with Iron Man?
I think so. But I guess
It's
been building since
2009.
Like Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man, and like X-Men movies. Like X-Men, the very first X-Men movie was kind of that superhero. Like that's whenever superhero films became like legit things, and not just kind of the Batmans and the you know that sort of thing. So,
2008 was the original Iron Man. I agree with that to an extent, but they still tried to treat these movies as. They were kind of shoved into the superhero genre, you know what
yes.
I mean? And they didn't try to bring them into the mainstream. Right, these are mainstream movies now. Like
right.
this is not a niche audience. This is the mainstream
right.
summer movie tentpole. Like this is the audience that we're shooting for. This is not like a Star Trek movie that's shooting for even the Star Trek movies, you know, are reaching a broader audience than, you know, the older Star Trek movies used to
yeah.
reach. And so
which is awesome.
Like that, you know, it's a larger discussion with nerd culture and how that's kind of moved into the forefront in our society. But you know, I think with Iron Man, you know, that really started this renaissance of, you know, bringing these movies into the mainstream culture. And
right.
let's treat them as normal movies, the superheroes in them,
right.
rather than these niche superhero movies.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Because while the Nolan films like Batman Begins, it really grounded the Batman character, it was still very Batman-esque. Like
yeah.
It really didn't pull any punches whenever it came to the Batman, you know, mythos or all of these like very superhero-y things. It
yeah.
really didn't pull any punches. It didn't seem like it was trying to appeal to a mass audience. It was trying to appeal to people who like Batman and like The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of garnered, just because of it was just being a solid film, it garnered a lot of that extra stuff and set the stage, really set up the Marvel movies
mm-hmm.
to be the big hits that they kind of are.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on, you know, the fact that people were wanting another superhero film
mm-hmm.
After that. So
there was an article in Entertainment Weekly, man, it was earlier this year before Captain America, and they had a bar graph showing all the total grosses of each of these movies. And as there were more movies introduced each year, the money kind of started spreading out. And like there's no one movie that just jumps like way above the pack. And I think that's what we run the risk of whenever we have DC and Warner Brothers, Marvel, Fox, and Sony all releasing superhero movies. And those are just like the big four studios. You know, you had things last year, I think it was RIPD. Like, that thing flopped. You know, you're going to have flops. We're going to start seeing some of these superhero movies just tank.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much, you know, it's like, you know.
And they're all big budget films. Like, I mean, they all, you know, they've been pulling, you know, big name actors. They obviously have a lot of graphics and CG and that sort of thing. So it's like they're not low budget films. They're all very large budget films.
They can't really afford to flop, you know, like. And if they do, then it's the end of a franchise or something.
Yeah, I mean, and then it's like you're not going to see another one of those.
Right.
So I mean, I that point is really interesting. You know, as far as you know, winning, I guess it just becomes harder and harder as more of these films come out to get. You know, you're basically getting the same percentage of people, or there's only a certain amount of money out there.
Yeah.
And you're all kind of grabbing for it, so it just kind of
in
spreads
the summertime,
it. Right? In the summertime, whenever most of these movies come out,
right?
So.
You know, like. And so, you know, whenever we look forward, or when, you know, maybe a few years down the road, we look back and say, well, none of these movies are making as much as the Avengers, or none of them are even, you know, making close to, you know, Captain America or something like that. That could very well be the reason. It's because, you know, the base is spread out, your money's spread out, and not everyone is going to go see every single movie now, since we're making, you know, if all those studios, if all they did was make two a year, you know, that's eight movies versus, you know, back in 2009, I think you had three.
Right.
You know.
And I'm going to pick my favorite, like, three or four and go see those as opposed to, like, all eight maybe, you know, that sort of thing. Like, that's the mentality we have is, like, oh, well, I'd rather see X over whatever, like, or Guardians of the Galaxy over the next, you know, whatever film. So
do you think so who holds the upper hand in that scenario whenever you have so many options?
I definitely think that the Batman and Superman names will draw, but this movie has to be good before any of that will work. Because it's like, while we did have the Man of Steel movie and it was good, I don't think that it proves the validity of this DC franchise. This is going to have to prove that to me.
It was only one movie.
Right. It was only one movie. It only featured one villain and one, you know, one superhero. And it even didn't, I mean, it featured General Zod, but it didn't feature the most iconic Superman villain, Lex Luthor. And so we're going to bring that up in this movie. So there's a lot of things in this movie that have to work perfectly in order for this franchise to be legitimized and for me to just say, yes, I feel like that is a going to make money. You know, it's like, because if this is bad, or if this is even close to bad, if it's just okay, it's like, no way. Yeah. There's no way. They're, you know, the Marvel guys have been hitting it too hard and have, you know, it's just they've been hitting all of the right notes for so long that I'm not going to pull out of that cinematic universe and invest a ton of money into something that is like, oh, it's okay.
Well, so for me personally, I don't, we've talked about this before. The last few Marvel, like we had Captain America, which I thought was okay. Thor 2, I loved. And then Iron Man 3, which I thought was okay. You know, like it was good, but it wasn't amazing. I thought there were certain aspects of it that were great. But like I said, you know, like.
You think that franchise is weakening?
If you were starting, not necessarily, because I think Guardians of the Galaxy looks amazing. I think Avengers 2 is probably going to be really good. But. If, say, you started the franchise on either one of those two movies, I would be out. Like, I wouldn't have the trust that I still have in Marvel based on those movies. But because we have this huge past, and how many movies do we have in that first phase? Like, because we have all of that, I'm just going to like, well, I'll watch every movie that they put out because I trust them. Like, the majority of their movies I love, you know? And with something like... you know, Man of Steel.
You don't think that Zack Snyder really has garnered that trust?
No, not really.
I don't either.
Oh, as a director, no, he hasn't. He's either
not at all.
Movies I really, really like, or he has movies I really, really don't like.
Yeah, or movie. I mean, even to that point, it's like some of the ones that it's like back in the day, whenever you first saw him or whatever, you really, really liked him.
Like 300.
Like whenever you compare those to some things that have happened like more recently, it's like, I still don't see that it holds up over time. You know, it's like, it doesn't feel like a classic to me. It just feels like something that happened and it's gone, you know? And I feel like some of the Marvel movies are classics. Avengers 1, that is a classic movie that it's
Iron Man 1,
that's a classic. Those are going to live on for, but it's like Zack Snyder movies. It's like, I don't know if, I don't know if I would care if I didn't see any of those movies ever again. I mean, maybe 300 is the only one that I'm really like, you know, super into, you know, super pumped about seeing.
I think I've watched Watchmen like twice. You know, I love 300.
Watchmen once.
I really love 300. The other difference between the two franchises, you know, like for instance, other than only having one movie under DC's belt, but
right,
you know, as we move forward, like we need to see this franchise with different directors at the helm and see if, you know, like does this world that they're creating, this quote unquote, you know, franchise or cinematic universe that they're creating, does it stand up under different people at the helm? You know, Disney's doing that with Marvel, but they're also, you know, moving forward doing that with the Star Wars movies. You know, you've got the first episode in the trilogy that's coming up, directed by J.J. Abrams, but the second episode is going to be directed by someone else. Third is probably going to be directed by someone else. All the standalone films directed by someone else. And they're kind of taking that Marvel approach to it. And so it's like, we need to see this world stand up on its own feet with other people at the helm besides just this...
one guy,
you know? Just this one person.
Well, or Marvel Universe
same thing
have...
with Christopher Nolan. Like,
right.
You know, I mean, those were great, but they were great because Christopher Nolan directed them, yep. And Jonathan Nolan wrote them, and Christian Bale acted them.
Right. And again, I just don't have the trust with Zack Snyder that I have with like Christopher Nolan or anybody. It's like I don't have that. And even Joss Whedon, like he's like helming a lot of the kind of ongoing stories and what the togetherness of the Marvel Universe looks like. But he's not, you know, like you said, he's not directing. There's things that he's not involved in that, you know, are farther reaching than what he is involved in. So seeing it have legs is interesting. This brings us to another listener topic.
Ooh.
And it relates directly to it. This is from Jay Haney.
At Jay Haney on Twitter.
At Jay Haney on Twitter. And he says, ultimate Superman, Batman hopes for the next movie.
Hmm. Wow. All right. I hope that... I hope that we don't spend a lot of time with Batman and Superman fighting each other. I hope that's just a byline to get people into the theaters. I've never been a huge fan of, like, you know, the Hulk fights Wolverine or something like that. Like,
well, they're fun. Okay, so they are fun barroom conversations, or like
who would win in a fight?
Yeah, who would win in this fight? Or like they're just fun, like nerd, you know, argument stuff like that.
Yeah,
and so getting people invested on that battle, it's like okay, that's one thing, but. Yeah. I'm right there with you where it's like, if that's the whole movie,
right,
man, just I'm out. You know?
I hope they do it the way that the Avengers did it, because, you know, you had Thor fighting Captain America, and you had Thor fighting the Hulk, and you had who else was fighting?
Well,
they also
never really answered the questions of
who
would
win.
Right. Because it was always like either broken up by somebody else, or it was always like basically it was only there to both serve like the purpose of like, you know, fan service, where it's just like, hey, you know, mm-hmm. these guys are going to fight now. And it was also there to push the plot forward.
Yeah.
And that was the most genius thing that that Joss Whedon did in those films, was to find a way to make the action both necessary
mm-hmm.
as well as to drive plot points forward within that action. So it's very well scripted action, very well plotted. And so like... It just seems like from like the way we just look at it, where it's Batman versus Superman, just throwing that out there, just seems like really, I don't know.
I don't want 2 hours worth of them fighting and then the whole destruction of Metropolis or Gotham again, you know?
Well, Metropolis, hopefully, like my thing is I don't want to spend a lot of time in Metropolis because we destroyed that sucker pretty darn good last time.
Yeah.
It's like that. That's another thing. Like that's something that I would like to get out of Metropolis a lot in this next film.
And I feel like we will, because you know, if we have people like Wonder Woman, we're gonna have Aquaman. We're gonna have to get out of Metropolis.
Right.
Like they're not all gonna come to Metropolis. Well, we also saw that photo I referenced earlier. It looked like it could possibly be in Gotham.
Right.
Kind of has like this old Victorian looking. Background, smokestacks, and
yeah.
Things
so the
like
only
that.
Thing we know is it's not a Metropolis that we've seen. You
right.
know, I mean, Metropolis is a very new city. That's so. I think it probably is Gotham, and Batman really doesn't get out of Gotham a ton. I mean, so to keep it to base this a lot in Gotham, I'm totally okay with that. Something else that I don't want to do, or I want to see with this film, is I want to see people just being the superheroes. I don't want to see a lot of like backstory flashbacks, and, yeah. and I don't know how much high hopes I have for this because of like David Goyer and his crazy, you know.
He loves flashbacks, dude.
He loves like flashbacks and non-linear storytelling, which is like not my thing necessarily with these types of films. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to spend a lot of time in who these characters were. I want to spend a lot of time in who these characters are.
Yeah. I like the idea of Batman being older and that he's grizzled and kind of in the toward the end of his career. And I hope that we live there and, you know, he's very grizzled and wizened, and he, you know, kind of like doesn't put up with crap because he's tired of dealing with it all his life, you know, or something yeah. like that. But I agree. I don't need to see a lot of that backstory. I just need to know that like, he's this way because he's this grizzled veteran of the crime wars. And right. like, that's all I need to know. Well, we've had enough backstory, Batman backstory, that we can fill in the gaps. Like, we don't need it necessarily.
Right.
I also, you know, in a Batman versus Superman movie, don't need a ton of backstory about Wonder Woman or Aquaman.
We exactly.
just need to see they're there and they exist and we just accept it.
Right. And I think that's the part that I'm, you know, we don't have to ground these characters by giving them this, you know, painful backstory, that, you know, heart-wrenching backstory. Maybe only if you're going to do that, just do that in their own individual films. Don't do that in this, because this is supposed to be a team-up film. And that was the thing I liked about The Avengers, was because we'd already set up all of this kind of, you know, these ongoing stories. And we didn't spend a lot of time, like, necessarily in their childhoods or in, you know, these other things that have happened to them throughout their lives, but we did at least have a history of maybe the last year of their life.
Yeah.
Before moving into these films.
Yeah.
And so I think that taking that approach is going to be interesting, where, I mean, if you fill in some of these gaps with their individual films, I feel like those mystery boxes will be so cool, where yeah. it's like, why does, you know, if somebody has a scar, it's like, why does he have this gigantic scar? Or if, you know, if Aquaman pops up, it's like, what in the world? Where yeah. did that come from?
Yeah.
You know, this guy's really cool. I want to know more. And take that fan curiosity
yeah.
and parlay that into individual films. I think that's, you know, doing it backwards from the Avengers route is a cool way to go about it. I just don't know if we're going to see that based, again, on David Goyer.
For sure. I would love to see Stephen Amell as the Arrow in Batman vs. Superman. And he came out last week and said that, you know, he's definitely not in it. But, you know, who knows?
Okay, so after he came out with that, here was like my comment was, and I was talking to my wife about it, and it was like, man, okay, the one thing that Zack Snyder could do to light up the world and get them excited about this film is to announce that Stephen Amell is in it. I don't care if you like the whole continuity thing, where it's like, oh, well, continuity, you know, between the show versus the thing, just make them two completely different arrows.
Yeah.
But at least have him in it, or maybe even like a cameo or something. I realize like the difficulties of this, and Stephen Amell kind of went into detail about why it wouldn't work. And I respect that. I totally respect that. I totally get his points. I totally see it. And it's not like, oh, the movie version is the quintessential version of the Arrow. Stephen Amell is the quintessential version of the Arrow. And the television show is the, you know, they're defining a character.
The definitive version.
That is the definitive version. It's not like it's the consolation prize, is how he put it. And I agree with that 100%. But again, if Zack Snyder or whoever was involved in that film and could make this decision, just do it.
Yeah.
Like, again, if there's one thing that
same
could
thing with The Flash.
Right. If there's one thing that can make me excited about it, you excited about it, literally the entire world excited about it, it's that Stephen Amell is in that movie.
Yeah.
Standing right up there with Batman and Superman.
As Arrow. And I think it would lift both brands. It would lift the movie and it would lift the show.
Of course, man. And everyone would be invested in this film that is invested in the show. And yeah. that show has 2 years worth of I guess, solid fans
yeah.
dedicated to
that
Stephen
Amell has 1.5 million, you know, Facebook followers. He, you know, he's on there all the time.
Exactly. And you can't tell me if they threw him into a scene where, like, there's the, you know, the Green Arrow is in it and he pops up on a rooftop with Batman at the end of the film, post credits. You cannot tell me that all 1 million and some odd people aren't buying a ticket. Like,
oh, yeah,
they're
for
all
sure.
buying a ticket.
The, That would be amazing.
Like, that's the only thing, like, it just frustrates me that, like, somebody probably won't make that happen.
The one logistical problem I see is, you know, like we saw last year, the production schedule of Arrow is outrageously out of control.
Well, it was last year. They're trying to fix that this year.
I mean, they have to because, I mean, that show lost momentum. You would go, okay, here's a show, next show, next week, no show. Then a show, then no show,
yeah,
then a show. I mean, it's just like we're skipping every other week, man.
The best portion was the last four episodes were back to back weeks,
yeah,
and that felt the most natural,
right? And so,
I think that was the longest stint that we had.
Because of that, and they've really only had what 2 months off, and now they're shooting again, and that's probably good because of, you know, like they need to get this show rolling so that we can maybe possibly not have a gap this time,
right?
But you know, like whenever they're shooting 10 months out of the year, I don't see when he has enough time to shoot a movie.
That's true. They are this year for Arrow. I think I read somewhere that they were doing a better production schedule where they're going to do it in a first half of the season, second half of the season, to where there's a bigger break around like the holidays.
Yeah.
To where they can either catch up or whatever, but they're going to batch them together as closely together as possible in two sections versus like trying to keep it constant and consistent by skipping every other week.
Yeah.
So I mean, supposedly it's supposed to be a little bit better, but again, I agree with you where it's like that show is pretty all consuming for him. Mm-hmm. And you know,
I still see how he has time for, you know, even a 4 month movie production.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, I don't know what he'd have to do.
I don't either. I mean, that was the one thing that could take, you know, Zack Snyder's movie and put it over the top. And it's like, that would get people in the seats and for sure would light up more people than the Marvel films. You know? The next question coming from Jay Haney once more.
Yeah.
Is what DC television series should come after The Flash?
Now they've already got
Constantine that's coming out at the same time, but I don't think that's
and
quite
Gotham.
And Gotham, but that's it's not on the CW. That's, you know.
Well, so like Constantine is not really like in the same universe as the rest of them.
It's not superhero.
And Gotham, while it is in the same universe, it's not really related to these. It doesn't take place in the same time period, I guess. It doesn't take place at the same time as that.
Does it even take place in the same universe? Could this be an Earth 2 situation?
I say that by you know, meaning that, you know, this is going to supposed to be like our Batman that we know about, but it's not like not necessarily doesn't tie in with these other
and it doesn't tie into franchises the movie and movies or anything like that.
Yeah. Right. And so I think in terms of let's do both. So in terms of like characters that fit in the Arrow/Flash world, I would love to see like a Superboy or something like that, or maybe even I'll tell you what I would love to see. I would love to see a Power Girl TV series.
Right on. So we're like jumping into the kind of the Metropolis and that kind of superhero, the Superman, I guess, family.
Yeah, like the thing that I don't want them to do is make this some kind of like weird CW drama, but they've done a good job with The Flash and Arrow that I don't think that they would, but just because it's a female character, I could see them making it some like, you know, the female character is not the strongest on
the CW.
Say the CW, oddly as it sounds. That's their primary audience. As far as characters that don't fit into that world, I think I would like a Watchmen TV show that doesn't focus on the characters from the comic book, but maybe places it either before the Minutemen or after the events of the graphic novel / movie.
That's interesting.
And kind of just set it in that, like, the world where superheroes exist and people kind of have to deal with them. The police have to deal with them. I kind of like that idea. Like, it'd be cool to see, you know, like, you know, how they react to things that happen in our world, terrorist threats, you know, with people trying to take care of it on their own without the police doing it or the military doing it. Like, it'd be cool to see a Watchmen set in current day.
That's cool. That's cool. Man, that's a lot of, you just posed some interesting questions there. The ones that I would say, like, within that universe, I would love to see, like, we've got part of the Birds of Prey right now, but I would love to see a Birds of Prey, and that would include Batgirl in my mind. Like, where we,
that'd be really cool.
Let's bring in one of the Batgirls, and it doesn't even have to be Barbara Gordon. It could be like Stephanie Brown, or it could be, you know, anybody that you know, in that realm. But it's like, let's bring out the Birds of Prey. And it's like, I guess if you have it on the CW, again, you run the risk where it's like, that's, you know, it's female characters. But I think we need to see more of that. I think that, you know, we have some really strong female characters in the Arrow. But I think that superhero universe, especially, you know, even
I think Canary is the only one in Arrow.
Right. But it's, you know, strong. I'm just talking about strong female characters because we got Felicity. I mean, there's good characters there. But it's like, but you don't necessarily see them in their own roles or anything. But it's like, if we had, you know, the Canary teaming up with like Batgirl, I mean, it's like, right. If we had the Birds of Prey, I think that would be a really intriguing series to watch, and really would kind of strike out on its own away from kind of the Flash and that sort of thing. Cause the Flash is kind of occupying this happier kind of friendly universe. Yeah. And then we've got Arrow kind of in this darker city, but if we could get, and I guess maybe globetrotting in the next season. But if we could get like a Birds of Prey or something like that, I think that would really have an interesting tone depending on who the helmers were on it, for sure.
We're seeing next season in The Arrow, they announced that Brandon Routh is going to play Adam.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, he was Superman.
Right.
And he's being demoted to Adam.
I don't know if that's a demotion, because well, did you see Superman Returns?
Yeah.
Superman really didn't have, I mean, I don't know.
No, for sure. But, you know, like, he goes from, like, I mean, he's obviously looking for work and he needs work. And so, like, that's why, you know, you cast this guy.
Yeah. And he's got that classical kind of superhero look, that clean cut superhero look.
But, like, what if they break through, you know, think that may be some way that they're trying to sneak that in as like, okay, let's see how this character does and maybe break this off as its own show.
I think that would work. I would kind of like, I don't know. It depends on how he is introduced and that sort of thing. Cause the Atom, the most intriguing, version of the Atom that I know of was Geoff Johns in the, whenever we were doing, I mean, I guess whenever the reboot happened and stuff in the Justice League of America, right before we had this last bit of
in the New 52?
Yeah, the New 52. Whenever
we're talking comics now.
I'm talking comics, yeah. The most intriguing version of the Atom came from a Geoff Johns story, and it, like, the backstory just happened to be awesome. And so I really think that character, depending on how it's introduced, can be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It just depends. It really just depends. Cause again, that person ended up being, you know, not who she thought, or everybody thought that she was. And so it's like, I guess just depends on the backstory for him. It just depends on how he's introduced and where that goes. I think in a more intriguing way to go is with the Canary or something like that, because she's already established. She has this cool kind of backstory and a blackout of, you know, 5 years or whatever, 4 years that we don't know where she was. So I think there's a lot to pull from that character already. So seeing another person introduced and tried to spin off, maybe that's, I don't know, seems like too much to me.
You know, if you're taking a character from the current series, like, she's the only female character that could stand alone in her own show. Like, the rest of them, they couldn't.
Well, and they already are installed in the Arrow world.
Right.
And whereas she
kind of...
As supporting
characters.
Right, and she kind of is this kind of come-and-go character that could definitely, you know...
Right.
And same with Barry, where we introduced him, and he's kind of a character that can come and go, that sort of thing. So, I don't know. It's like... we'll see how the Atom goes, but I think that a Canary or something like that would be
what about something that's not in that universe?
Something that's not in that universe. Man, I'm thinking like Jonah Hex or like old school, like where you have like kind of a something completely off the wall like that. Or if you have like, who are they? The guys who would go out and, the guys who would go out and find the weird things on islands and stuff. And I don't know. I can't remember the name of those guys.
Yeah.
Right now. Oh man, I'm losing my mind.
Challengers of the Unknown.
Yes. The Challengers of the Unknown. And so like, I feel like that show could be really interesting because Fringe, like I'm thinking like in that kind of a tone where there's just weird things that happen and they go investigate these things. So you could have kind of this exploratory thing that could even be based in a single location. So that way it didn't get too expensive budget wise. But you know, you've got that kind of a thing. I feel like that would be a more interesting take, just something completely off the wall from the backlog. I feel like that'd be really fun.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that's all the questions we have.
Yes.
If you have any topics you want us to talk about, submit those at stayontargetpodcast.com. We're giving away some posters.
Yep. 2 weeks.
Yep. And
it's the Guardians of the Galaxy posters, and they're pretty awesome. They're featuring all the main characters here. It's ones we got from the IMAX first look.
Yeah. So We're giving away two of those. If you submit a topic, we will possibly talk about it on the podcast, and we will definitely put your name in the pot to win these. We'll randomly select all
two
the names.
Two winners.
Yep, and mail these to you as long as you live in the United States. So go to stayontuckerpodcast.com and send us a topic or question, and you will be entered to win the posters.
You can follow us both on Twitter at JohnWright777.
And ChrisWright250.
And you can find us always online at stayontargetpodcast.com. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time on Stay on Target.